Greek script for day 48. Part 1. 1. I'd like to buy this pair of shoes. The price tag on it says $20 a pair, and the assistant promised to offer me a 20% discount. So how much have I to pay for the shoes?
2.
This is Peter Coffin for today's weather forecast. Today we'll have sunny skies with very strong winds. Which of the statements is right according to the forecast?
3. Yesterday I bought a blue shirt which cost me $34. Now I want to change it for that white one priced at $49. How much do I have to pay you?
4. This is a map. Mother tells me to turn right at the first crossing and turn left at the second one and go down the street. And then I will find the museum. Then where is the museum on the map?
5. We meet each other every other day. This time we met on the 12th of October. So what day is the day when we meet next?
6. Anne Copper would like to book a single room with a double bed for one night. Which of the four choices accords with her requirement?
7. John prefers apples to pears, and he will never think of touching the pineapple. We have all kinds of fruit. Which one will he choose?
8. You are the last person I will turn to if I'm in trouble. Whose meaning of the four sentences is closest to what you hear?
9. Accounts will be charged £5 for a month's service fee if the minimum balance falls below £400 at any time during the stated period. So if you keep £35 in your account, after 3 months, how much money will you have in your account?
10. The square is 30 meters long and the width of it is 13 meters. So the total area of the square should be...
Part 2. Nice to meet you, Peter. I am making a survey about people's careers. May I ask you, what do you do?
I'm described as an area sales manager. That would normally imply that one has somebody to manage. In my case, it's just a glorified sales rep. I go around visiting shops, maybe 5 or 6 per day when I'm traveling. The rest of the time I spend in the office, answering queries from customers about sales and planning the next trip. My trip usually lasts about 2 or 3 weeks, and I go mostly to Germany, Austria, and Switzerland.
What do you find rewarding about your work?
Well, the travel as much as anything else. The job is fairly badly paid, but the fact that I get free trips to the foreign countries more or less of my choice for most of the year does in some measure recompense for that.
What do you find frustrating or annoying about it?
Well, I've already mentioned the pay. Obviously frustrating is also customers that leave one waiting. I've been known to get my own back on customers who leave me waiting for half an hour or so, simply by selling them twice as much as I know they need. It's not a trick that I would recommend using all that often, but on the whole the frustrations of the job are minimal.
Part 3. People in the U.S., when they attain legal marriage age and meet certain medical requirements, they are free to choose their own mates. Once a couple has decided to get married, the man customarily gives the girl a diamond ring. The use of a ring comes from the ancient custom of using a ring to settle an important agreement. When the wedding day is decided upon, the girl sends out wedding announcements or invitations to friends and relatives. Then they send wedding gifts to the girl's home. On the wedding day, it is supposed to be bad luck for the bride and groom to see each other before the wedding. Another old custom that many people believe will bring good luck to the marriage is for the bride to wear something old, something new, something borrowed, and something blue. Before the wedding day, the groom always chooses a best man, a good friend to help him and stand beside him during the wedding ceremony. The custom of having a best man is thought to have come from ancient times when a strong friend helped the groom from the bride's father. When a couple marries, the groom gives his bride a wedding ring. Many marriages are double ring ceremonies, that is, the bride and the groom exchange rings. The wedding ring is customarily a simple, plain gold band. The roundness of the ring symbolizes eternity and announces that the couple is united for life. The wedding ring is worn on the third finger of the left hand. People believe that a vein from the third finger runs directly to the heart. Near the end of the reception, which is offered by the bride's parents, the bride throws her bouquet of flowers to the unwed bridesmaids. As the bride and groom leave for their honeymoon, the guests all throw confetti on them. This is a symbol of joy and happiness.
Tape script for day 49. Part 1. 1. I've already made up my mind to make up for what I did. Which of the following statements is closest to what you hear?
2. Vitamin C is one of the most important substances our bodies need. If you need to supplement your ingestion of vitamin C, you can take more fruits, vegetables, or some medicine. Which of the following things is not rich in vitamin C?
3. The doctor asked me to take this medicine every 8 hours a day, and to take 2 pills at each time. So how many pills I have to take one day?
4. In order to go to the cinema from my home, I must first take bus number 16 and get off at Park Avenue, and then transfer to bus number 60 and get off at Mark Street where the cinema is located. So when I go back from the cinema to my home, where should I get off to change my bus, and which bus should I transfer to?
5. My tutor requires me to finish my experiment in a week and turn in an experiment report in 3 days after finishing the experiment. So how soon have I to turn in my experiment report?
6. Daisy has hurt her left leg badly, which prevents her from attending the ball that she has dreamed of for a long time. She has almost cried her eyes out for that. Which of the following is right according to what you hear?
7. Once I move away from a place, I usually drift from my friends there because I'm not good at keeping contact with them when we are separated. Which of the following is not right according to what you hear?
8. I am 24 years old now and my boyfriend is 6 years older than me. We plan to get married 3 years later. So when we get married, how old is my boyfriend?
9. Jane has booked a room in the hotel and the room number is 79, just located beside the elevator. Which of the following pictures represents Jane's room?
10. The weather is very hot these days, and the foods are very easy to go bad. So Tommy is going to buy it in order to freeze the food for later use. What is Tommy going to buy?
Part 2.
Let's have some coffee.
All right. There's a coffee shop next door.
That would be nice.
2 coffees, please.
Do you like the play, Martin?
It was interesting.
Yes, it's interesting. But did you like it?
I'm not sure. What did you think?
Well, it was interesting. I really liked the first half.
Really? I thought the first half was rather slow.
Maybe it was a little long, don't you think?
I don't know. It was either too slow or too long. I don't know which.
What about the second half? Did you like it?
I liked it very much.
I thought it was very moving.
What do you mean, moving?
Oh, Martin, you know what moving means.
Sometimes what you call moving doesn't move me.
You're not so easily moved by plays.
I guess not. What did you find moving?
I thought the death scene was very moving. I felt exactly as the father did.
Yes, that was rather emotional. Did you cry?
You know I always cry at the emotional scenes. Did you cry?
No, I don't cry at plays.
Really? I thought I saw you.
Perhaps a little. I found the last scene very sad. When the children left home, I think I cried a little.
Did it remind you of our children?
They haven't left home.
But they will. That was the saddest thing in the play.
But was it real?
What do you mean?
Is that what really happens in families?
Of course. Your children grow up and they leave home. I left home, you left home, and our children will leave home.
And our children will leave home. Let's not talk about that. I feel sad again. Are you crying?
A little. I'll be all right in a minute. Don't you think the last part was too fast?
Do you think the actors spoke too fast?
No, I don't mean that. I mean it develops too fast.
Oh, I see what you mean. The mother got sick, then she died very quickly. Then the children left home. It happens too fast.
Yes, that's what I mean.
Part 3. Do you know who invented the slide fastener, or rather, the zipper? No one thought of anything like the zipper until Whitcomb Judson came along. Judson's slide fastener was an out-of-the-blue invention. No one knows what gave him the idea. No one even knows much about him, except that he was a mechanical engineer living in Chicago, and that he patented other inventions to do with the street railway system and motor cars. Judson invented the first zipper in 1891. This ingenious little device looks very simple, and the principle behind it is simple too. Yet it took 22 years later, together with another inventor, to make the zipper really practical. The zipper had to be produced cheaply, because no one would pay a lot of money for it. Judson invented a machine to mass produce his slide fastener, but the machine was terribly complicated and kept on breaking down. So, In 1905, Judson invented a new fastener, which was easier to manufacture. Clothing manufacturers, however, were not the least bit interested in trying out the fasteners, so the only way Judson could get them onto the market was by letting peddlers sell them from door to door. Moreover, the new fastener was stiff and clumsy, and had a bad habit of bursting open at inconvenient times. Then a young Swedish engineer called Sundback came to work for Judson's struggling company. He thought hard and decided the interlocking parts needed to be much smaller to give the fastener greater flexibility and to stop it bursting open. After several attempts, Sundback invented a really practical fastener in 1913. It is in all important ways the same as the one we use today. Clothing manufacturers still refused to use the fastener, but in 1918, an inventor showed the American Army a flying suit he had invented. It happened to use the slide fastener. The Army put the suit through such tough tests that it disintegrated, all except the fastener. A Navy officer happened to see the tests, and Judson's unknown little company got an order for 10,000 fasteners. Later, Judson's invention was used in the manufacture of rubber galoshes by a big company. They called the galoshes a zipper. This is how the slide fastener got its popular name.
Tape script for day 50. Part 1. 1. My family is going to visit Edinburgh for 4 days. We need a small room and a large room with a double bed. If the small room is $5 a day and a large one is $12 a day, how much will we pay for our stay?
2. John looks at the rear view mirror and the side view mirror first. Then he turns his head back to make sure no one is behind. After this, he starts the engine. What is John doing?
3. The forward breaks through the defense by a deceptive movement and shoots at the goal successfully. What kind of sports is talked about in this sentence?
4. In order to keep your skin moist and smooth, you have to drink 8 cups of water during a day, and each cup contains 250 milliliters of water. So how much water should you drink a day?
5. There are 30 students in our class, among which 15 join the football team and 18 join the baseball team. So how many students join both of the two teams? 6. My name is Joan Coffin, and one of my classmates has the same first name as mine, but her family name is Colin. So what's her name?
7. You should turn to right at the first crossing and then turn to the left at the second. Go down the street, and when you meet the next crossing, do not forget to go straight across the road without turning. After crossing the road, you will meet another crossing. Turn right this time. Then how many times you should change your direction and which direction you should turn to the last time?
8. I have no sympathy on him. In my view, he just lies in the bed he has made. Which of the following choice accords with what you hear?
9. In order to keep himself healthy, he sleeps 8 hours per day. It is 11 p.m. now, so what time should he get up?
10. It is now 8 a.m. I have to reach my office in half an hour. After 3 hours' work, I will go to visit my dentist to have my teeth checked, which may cost me 1 hour. After half an hour's lunch, I will have my baseball course until 3 p.m. So in 6 hours from now, where will I be?
Part 2.
Hello, this is Lucy speaking. Who's that?
Hello, Lucy. It's me. I need you to do something urgent for me immediately.
Oh, Mr. White, please tell me.
I've received an invitation which requires me to attend an important business meeting. I'd like you to book me 2 tickets on a flight to Washington.
Okay, when do you want to leave?
Next Monday morning.
Fine, next Monday morning. That is the 14th of October. Oh, I need the names, Mr. White.
Mrs. Jonathan and I will go together. And Jonathan. That's the whole name.
I think you want first class seats.
Oh, yes. I always take the first class seats.
Mr. White, there's another thing. Could you tell me your passport number? And Miss Jonathan's, if you know. If you do not know her number, I can telephone her to get it by myself.
I know her number. Listen, Mrs. Jonathan's passport number is 107-782-83. And my number is 706-582-13.
Let me repeat. 107-782-83 and 706-582-13, right?
That's right.
Do you want me to send someone to the travel agency to pick up the tickets?
Yes, you may arrange it. Thank you, Lucy.
It's my pleasure. I will send the tickets to you as soon as I get them.
Part 3. Americans recognize that there is a past on which the present rests, but they've not developed their sense of the depth of time to the extent that this has been done in the Middle East and South Asia. The Arab looks back 2,000 to 6,000 years for his own origins. History is used as the basis for almost any modern action. The chances are that an Arab won't start a talk or a speech or analyze a problem without first developing the historical aspects of his subject. The American assumes that time is depth, but he takes this for granted. The American never questions the fact that time should be planned and future events fitted into a schedule. He thinks that people should look forward to the future and not dwell too much on the past. His future is not very far ahead of him. Results must be obtained in the foreseeable future, 1 or 2 years, or at the most 5 or 10. Promises to meet deadlines and appointments are taken very seriously. There are real penalties for being late and for not keeping commitments in time. The American thinks it is natural to quantify time. To fail to do so is unthinkable. The American specifies how much time is required to do everything. I'll be there in 10 minutes. It will take 6 months to finish that job. I was in the army for 4.5 years. The Americans, like so many other people, always use time as a link that chains events together. If one event occurs on the heels of another, we inevitably try to find a causal relationship between them. If A is seen in the vicinity of B's murder shortly after the crime has been committed, we automatically form a connection between A and B. Conversely, events which are separated by too much time are difficult for us to connect in our minds. This makes it almost impossible for us as a nation to engage in long-range planning. Day 51. Hello, can I come in?
Oh yes, come in. How can I help you?
I was looking for the economics office. I've been all over the arts faculty building looking for it, but I could only find the School of Accounting and Economic History. Is this the right place?
Yes, this is the School of Economics.
Oh, good. I'm a new student, and I was wondering if someone could give me some information.
Well, I might be able to help. I lecture on that program. What do you need to know?
Quite a few things, actually. Firstly, how many lectures a week do I have to attend?
Well, the economics course is a double unit, so there are 2 lectures a week and 1 tutorial. The lectures are scheduled for Tuesday and Thursday.
What time?
Let me see. You know this information is all in the handout, which you should have received yesterday at the orientation meeting.
Oh, was your meeting yesterday? I didn't know about that. No one mentioned.
Yes, there was, but never mind. Now lectures are at 4 in the afternoon.
4's a bit late. I've got a part-time job that starts at 4:30.
Well, you can't be in 2 places at once, can you? And attendance at lectures is necessary. We expect at least 90% attendance at this university, you know.
90%? That's high. Do they enforce that rule?
Yes, they do. They're pretty strict about it, actually.
And what times have been set down for the tutorials? Do you have that information?
That's a very well-attended course, so that's a number of tutorial times. Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, all at 9 o'clock. Yours will be allocated at the first lecture.
Can't I choose the time?
Maybe, maybe not. You'll have to talk to the lecturer on the course. Dr. Roberts is his name.
Oh, okay.
Multiple choice. Okay, well, good morning, everybody. My name's Elizabeth Reed, and I'm your assistant welfare officer. What I'd like to do now is tell you a little more about some of the social facilities available on the campus, and also to tell you something about what the town has to offer. As you probably know already, the Student Union Building is the main center of social life here, as indeed it is in most British universities. The union runs a weekly program of events for all tastes. Oh, everything from discos to talks by guest speakers. Many of these events are fundraising activities for charities, which the union takes very seriously. They manage the students' union paper shops, selling magazines and newspapers, as well as stationery, sweets, and so on. Then let me see. There's the ticket shop where you can get some very good deals on, well, for example, coaches to London or inexpensive charter flights, as cheap as you'll get anywhere, people say, or tickets for big pop groups playing here or at other venues all over the country, or plays in London. Oh, and we mustn't forget the union cafeteria. Yes. Did you have a question?
Yes. Does the union also provide help with any problems? I mean, advice on financial problems, for example? Or does the university provide that?
Yes, the union runs their own advice service, offering help with financial matters such as grants. I am sure you realize everything medical should be discussed through the University Medical Service, which also has an excellent counseling center. I think that was made clear yesterday. However, the union has its own officer who can help advise on legal problems.
Day 52.
Good morning. Can I help you?
Yes. I was told to come over here to get a parking sticker. Is this the right place?
Yes, it is. Are you a postgraduate student?
Yes, I am.
Okay, well, I'll just need to take some details. Your name?
Richard Lee. That's spelled L-double-E.
Richard Lee. And the address?
Flat 13, 30, Enmore Road.
How do you spell Enmore?
E-N-M-O-R-E. And that's in the suburb of Newport. M-E-W-P-O-R-T.
Faculty?
I beg your pardon?
Which faculty are you in?
Architecture. The Faculty of Architecture.
Right. And the registration number of your car?
Let me see. It's LJX058K.
LJX508K.
No, 058K.
And what make is the car?
It's a Ford.
A Ford? Fine. Well, I'll just get you to sign here, and when you've paid the cashier, I'll be able to issue you with the sticker.
Right. Where do I pay?
Just across the corridor in the cashier's office. Oh, but it's 12:30 now, and they close at 12:15 for lunch. But they open again at 2:15 until 4:30.
Oh, they're not open till 2:15?
No, when you get the sticker, you must attach it to the front windshield of your car. I'm afraid it's not valid if you don't have it stuck on the windows.
Right, I see. Thanks very much. I'll just wait here then. Day 53. Radio presenter. Well, last week we talked about buying camping equipment, and today I'd like to talk to you about buying a bicycle. A simple enough exercise, you might imagine, but there are lots of things to look out for to make sure you get the best deal for your money. Well, the range of bicycles is enormous. There are racing bikes, touring bikes, mountain bikes, or just plain ordinary bikes for riding around town. They vary enormously in two basic ways, price and quality. This means that the choice you make will probably be determined by the amount of money you want to pay for your own personal needs. What is actually available, or a compromise of all three things? However, in broad terms, you can spend anything from $50 to $2,000 on a bike, so you'll need to know what you're looking for. Single-speed cycles, that is bikes with no gears, are really only suited to short, casual rides. Their attraction is their simplicity and reliability. After years of neglect, they still manage to function, though not always too efficiently. If it's basic transport you're after, then you can't go wrong. Three-speed cycles, on the other hand, are all that is necessary for most town riding, going down to the shops, and things like that. Like the single-speed bike, they are simple and reliable. If you're going to be going up and down lots of hills, then you'll probably want something more efficient. 5 and 10 speed cycles are best suited to riding over long distances or hilly terrain and to serious touring. So if it's serious touring you're interested in, get a 5 or a speed bike. However, it's worth remembering that the difference in price between a 5 and 10 speed cycle is usually very little, so it's well worth paying that little bit extra to get the 10 speed one. So, I would tend to recommend the 10 speed bike as the price is similar. However, you'll be getting better quality components. Now, the next thing we need to look at is size. Buying a cycle is like buying clothes. First of all, you find the right size, and then you try it on to see if it fits. Contrary to what you might imagine, the size of the cycle is not determined by the size of the rails, except in children's cycles, but by the size of the frame. So you'll need to measure the length of your legs and arms to get a frame that is the right size for you. Well, that's all from Helpful Hints for today.
Day 54. I'm sorry, Vijay, what were you saying?
I wanted to know what else I had to do.
Oh, of course. Please go to the building on the other side of Smith Street. I want you to go to the reception area first. It's just inside the floor on the left as you enter from Smith Street. Give them this form.
Okay, do I pay my fees there?
No, but the fees office is in the same building. Go past the escalators and you'll see a game shop. It's in the corner. The fees office is between the game shop and the toilets.
Thanks. Where can I buy books?
The bookshop is opposite the lifts. It's right next to the entrance from Robert Street.
Your offices are very spread out.
Not as badly as they used to be. By the way, we offer very competitive overseas travel rates to our students.
Oh, I'd like to look into that.
Of course. The travel agency is at the Smith Street end of the building, on the corner next to the insurance office.
Thank you very much. Bye.
Day 55.
Now that I've got the official announcements out of the way, I'd like to tell you about tonight's program. The Brazilian drum band will be appearing on stage 3 at 7 p.m. This is the first time that they have performed outside South America, so their show is not to be missed. This will be followed by Claude and Jacques, the French mime artists, at 8 o'clock. During the performance, Claude and Jacques will be introducing special guests from the fields of music and dance. Meanwhile, on stage 2, there is a modern ballet from Great Grapefruit Incorporated, illustrating women's role in world peace. This will begin at 7 and last for roughly 2 hours. Stage 1 begins at 9 with a jazz fusion band, Crossed Wires, whose performance tonight is their last date on their world tour. Stage 1 continues with a regular guest at their festivals, comedian Tom Cobble. His show begins at 10:30. After Claude and Jacques at 9 on stage 3, there will be a performance by the Flying Barite Brothers, who are acrobats with the Albanian State Circus. The Flying Barite Brothers' fire-eating trapeze act is unique. No other performer has managed to equal their grand finale. From 11:15, we are happy to present Winston Smiles and the Kingston Beat, who will be playing authentic Jamaican reggae until the end of the official program at 1:30. Over on stage 2, The Great Mystery will be presenting his show of magic, illusion and mystery at 9:30. During the show, he will be chained and thrown into a sealed aquarium, from which he will try to escape. If everything goes to plan, the act will finish at 11:30, and the stage will be ready for the country and western music of Bluegrass Ben and the Cattlemen at 12. This act will be the last on stage 2 tonight. After Tom Cobble on stage 1, we have tonight's main attraction, The Proffers, who will be performing in public tonight for the first time since they broke up 5 years ago. The news is that they are back and are representing a show, including both old favourites and songs from their new album, which is to be released in September. They are expected on stage at midnight. After the official programme has ended, there will be a number of sideshows taking place around the site.
Day 56. Brighton, 774-621.
Hello, is that Mrs. Jarvis?
Yes, that's it.
We're studying at the university, and the housing officer has given your name and address. Is the accommodation still available?
Yes, it is. The present students are leaving soon, so it will be ready in 2 weeks' time.
That's good. Ah, I wonder if you could just give me a few more details.
Yes, of course. What would you like to know?
Well, is there a phone?
No, in your room, but there is a payphone in the entrance hall. It's all quite well furnished, though. It's got a television, fridge, washing machine, and a new stove. The only thing you have to bring is your bed linen. I don't provide sheets, blankets, or towels.
That sounds nice. What kind of heating do you have?
Well, there is a radiator in every room. Look, why don't you come and have a look around?
Thank you very much. Hey, when will it be convenient?
How about tomorrow? I will be in all morning.
Yes, that's fine. What bus should we take?
The number 72. It stops right outside the house, and buses run to and from the university every half hour.
Thank you very much. We'll see you tomorrow then.
Day 57. Hello, my name's Jennifer Davis. I'm the student affairs officer here at Maslow University, and I'd first of all like to welcome you all to this orientation talk. I'll be talking to you about the campus and a little of its history, and then we'll be introducing you to some of the facilities available to all Maslow University students, and in particular, overseas students. First, let me just point out to you two people you will definitely need to know. They are Bruce Chandler, who is the coordinator of the Overseas Students Office. Actually, you can see Bruce in that group of people over there. Bruce is the short man with a beard and glasses. Hi, Bruce. Bruce will be speaking to you later. The other person you'll be meeting is Donna Wilcox. Donna is in charge of the Student Union's Activities Office. In fact, Donna's just over there, too. She's the one with the white top and dark shirt. Hi there, Donna. She'll be speaking to you later today.
Day 58. Summary. Hello. Welcome to the Student Orientation Program. Today's session is on health issues, and this talk is about headaches and how to avoid them. It may surprise you to hear that headaches are often caused by hunger. In fact, one study suggested that 70% of headaches are related to hunger, which makes it the principal cause. The advice is simple. Eat 3 meals a day and try to keep to a fairly regular schedule of meals. People associate noises with headaches, and for most of us, excessive noise creates the conditions for a headache. Very loud noise is unpleasant, and people usually remove themselves from it. Having said that, younger people tend to tolerate noise much better than their elders, so I may be leaving noisy places far earlier than you. Just remember that exposure to too much noise may predispose you to a headache. Of course, we all associate headaches with studying. In fact, the headache doesn't come from the studying so much as from being tense. When we study hard, we often hunch over our work. Try raising your shoulders and tensing them. Now relax. Can you feel how much more comfortable a relaxed stance is? Another thing, it's very important to check that you're working in a good light. It will not actually hurt your eyes to work in a bad light, but it will make you tired very quickly, and it's very likely to give you a headache. What's more, if you have the book flat on a desk in front of you, it will be harder to read, and you'll have to hold your head at an odd angle. It is wise to have a bookrest which raises the material you are reading 45 degrees to the desk. This will help reduce your chance of a headache. Try to relax before bed so that you'll be relaxed when you try to sleep. A soak and a hot bath may be helpful. It's also important to really sleep when you go to bed. A good mattress is a wise investment for people who want to avoid headaches. This talk seems to be coming back to tension. Tension may cause you to chew too forcefully, clench your jaw, or grind your teeth, and this in turn may lead to headaches. It's very easy to say that you shouldn't grind your teeth, and very hard to stop, particularly if you grind your teeth in your sleep. Try to avoid situations which make you tense, particularly just before bed. If you do compulsively grind your teeth in your sleep, ask your dentist about a soft mouth guard. In general, try to eat regular meals and avoid tense situations. Be sure you get plenty of exercise. Hopefully your headaches will be greatly reduced. One other thing I should point out, avoid smoky rooms and cars. Such places certainly encourage headaches, and the smoke may be doing you quite serious long-term damage.
Table. Okay, I next want to outline what are commonly known as the 5 global responsibilities of a facilitator. This is to give you a better idea of what a facilitator does and why they're so important to meetings. One global responsibility is labeled blueprinting. Blueprinting a meeting involves creating an agenda and clarifying rules for the meeting. Much of this work is done together with the meeting leader. Blueprinting also means learning about each of the participants and what their goals and interests are with regard to the topic of the meeting. It also involves printing and photocopying documents for the meeting and assembling equipment such as visual aids. A second global responsibility is what we call pro-integration. Pro-integration happens during the actual meeting. For this, the facilitator must listen carefully to what the participants are saying, then clarify any unfamiliar terms or phrases spoken by the participants. He or she then summarizes what was said to ensure everybody at the meeting both fully understands and is fully understood. Global responsibility number 3 is what I term focusing. This is basically seeing that everyone keeps to the task at hand, not wandering off onto other topics. It's all too easy for discussion in a meeting to get off track. Here the facilitator supervises the discussion, making sure all comments are relevant to the task. Focusing also involves knowing in which direction the meeting should be going, and making sure it goes there. We can compare the facilitator's role here to that of a bus driver, steering the group where they need to go. This brings us to promoting, which is our 4th goal responsibility. Not everyone in a meeting may feel confident enough to talk, and we must remember that just because they're quiet, it does not mean that they've got nothing to contribute. So a facilitator might prompt people, that is, ask people questions or use other activities to get members involved. The task of prompting also means making sure that participants who tend to dominate allow the quieter members a chance to speak. After all, there's nothing more boring than having one or two people dominate a meeting. When participants get into disputes or arguments with each other, then it's time for the facilitator to take on the role of friction manager. This is the 5th global responsibility of the facilitator and last on our list. Friction management means handling conflicts in a positive and constructive manner. During meetings when members may have very different points of view, emotions can run high and people may begin to act negatively towards one another, getting into arguments. A good facilitator knows that this kind of negative serves no purpose at business meetings. Its effects are not constructive. So he or she then has to use his or her skills to return the group to a peaceful atmosphere and maintain that atmosphere. There are various skills involved in friction management, which I won't go into here. But basically, the notion of getting the group to focus on what they agree on rather than what they disagree on is vital.
Day 59. Let me introduce you to Donald McGlubbin, who is in charge of maintaining the facilities of our computer laboratory. And, over to you, Don.
Yes, Norman. Well, as you can see, we have well over 100 PC computers, as well as 20 Macintosh computers, set up for those students who need to produce high-quality graphic design work. Of course, maintenance of all these machines and the equipment that goes with them, printers, fax machines, modems, etc., takes up almost all of my time. So, we have a number of rules. All students are expected to follow the rules, or they will be unable to use the lab in the future, and just about everybody needs to use the lab at some time. First of all, log-on procedure. All students have to log on. That is, enter their name and lab number before the program menu comes up on the screen. The reason is that, if anything goes wrong with the machine, we can find out from you what it was and what you were doing when the problem occurred, and this can save a great deal of time when trying to solve the problem. Which brings us to the second rule. If something goes wrong, you mustn't just walk away from the computer or turn it off and pretend it hasn't happened. You must let me or one of my assistants know what has happened. And remember, we can always find out who was last using the machine. So, with those two simple rules, it becomes relatively easy to maintain so many machines. The third rule concerns the use of student disks. At no time are you allowed to bring your own disks into the laboratory. This lab is completely free of the need for student disks of any kind, because each computer is linked to a network, and there are four networks, each of which has its own file-serving machine. We don't want you to bring along your own disks for two very good reasons. The first reason is because of copyright laws. It's illegal to copy programs brought by the college. The second reason has to do with those nasty little programs called viruses, which can do a tremendous amount of damage. So, no student disks in the lab. We therefore insist that you leave your bags outside too, which is rule number four. Now, a network simply means a number of computers are linked together. In other words, we can share information. There are three networks for the PC computers and one network for the 20 Macintosh machines. That brings me to the fifth rule. Students must only access the network that is set up for their use. One of the three PC networks is only for first-year students to use, over here. Another is only for second-year students, over there, along the back wall. And the third network, on the far right, is reserved for third-year student use. The Macintosh computer network is reserved for second and third-year students only, unless you are a first-year student in the graphic design course. Rule 5. You can only access the network that is set up for your level. All networks have printout capability, and there is a charge of 40 cents per page on the laser printers. The dot matrix printers, which of course do not give such good quality printouts as the laser printers, are suitable mainly for giving a rough copy of your work. They are free for student use during class hours. After hours, a charge of 10 cents a page applies. Now, class hours, as you probably already know, are from 9 in the morning until 3:30 in the afternoon, Monday to Thursday, and until midday on Fridays. The computer lab, however, is open an hour before class begins each day, and until 6 o'clock every afternoon, except for Fridays, when the lab closes at 5. Now, if you need any assistance with the software program you're working on, you can either look in the manuals located on the shelves below each machine, or, if you're still having problems, you can ask one of the lab assistants to help out. In addition, there is always help at hand on screen. In most cases, simply by pressing function key number 1 at the top left of each keyboard. Well, that's about it. I forgot to mention the computer lab card, which contains your logon number. By producing your card, you can borrow computer books and manuals from the computer lab library. Okay, that's all I need to tell you at this stage. Back to you, Norman.
Thanks, Don. Right, next on the right, we come to the audio-visual laboratory.
Day 60. Hello, Scott. I believe you're going to be my partner for this practical session. Have you got the model set up?
Yes, it's right here. The instructions say we have to describe it first and label the diagram. I've started from where the water enters the machine. The water enters through a hose pipe, and then it turns a water wheel. You can see where the wheel is marked by an arrow pointing upwards. It's called a water wheel because it's designed so the water will catch against the wheel. This action spins a series of gears.
Are you going to describe the gears?
There are two worm gears, one vertical and one horizontal. The horizontal worm gear drives a circular gear. That gear is connected to a crank which changes the motion. The crank is already labeled. Do you see the two white arrows?
I see. Okay, the water has passed across the water wheel. Then what?
Okay, then you could say the water passes through the spray tube.
Yes, I see.
And the water is then spread over the lawn through holes at the top of the spray tube.
How are you going to describe the base?
How about this? The sprinkler stands on a base consisting of two metal tubes, which join at a hinge at one end, and continue into a plastic mounding at the other.
That's certainly started at the bottom. Do you want to mention that there's no water in the base?
I don't think that's necessary. If you look at the diagram, it's easy to see that the only metal tube to contain water is the spray tube. You can actually see the water coming out from it. That's it.